This is a RAID replay with an updated postscript.
We'll commence with a RAID report in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. This is the RAID report, available from therainreport.com, and for those of you who would like the option of listening via your cell phone, at 773-358-7845. That's 773-358-7845. I'm Byron Lee, KC9EEK. For decades, the frequency of 500 kHz was reserved for maritime emergency and distress calls via Morse code worldwide. That's no longer the case thanks to modern technology, so there it sits, essentially unoccupied. Well, not entirely, thanks to folks like Dr. Fred Robb, W1FR, whose consulting company, Green Mountain Radio Research Company, researches and designs high-efficiency RF power amplifiers for government and commercial use. Dr. Robb is one of 23 ham radio operators stateside that holds an experimental license from the FCC to experiment between 505 and 510 kHz. RAIN's Hap Holly, KC9RP, recently spoke with Dr. Robb about breaking new ground on 500 kHz.
This all got started back in 2004 when I, by chance, bumped into Paul Cigarnelli, W0RM. He had been part of a group that actually had a license and operated briefly in the 400 kHz range. They were shut down because they were treading on Coast Guard territory, and I started asking a bunch of questions. After a while, I realized that there was a frequency band that we could probably use near 500 kHz, which was the nearly abandoned maritime telegraphy band. I happened to know Dave Sumner from one summer when we were both interns at Collins Radio Company, and I also knew a guy who worked for the Coast Guard, so I had a connection there with the people who'd shut down this other license, and so I realized if I did a little bit of work here, I thought I could unjam this roadblock and get us going in the medium frequency range. So making a couple of phone calls was the easy part. I had to write up what we could do with the band and what the potential interference problems were and so forth. We got ARRL behind this, recruited a group of 23 radio amateurs to be the participants in it. ARRL in 2005 filed the application for the experimental license, and it was granted in September of 2006. And this allows these 23 designated stations to operate from 505 to 510 kilohertz with 20 watts ERP.
What hardware are you using?
Well, in what I think is the best tradition of amateur radio, we have virtually every kind of hardware you might imagine being used in this experiment. There are some guys who have adapted non-directional beacon transmitters. They've modified amateur radio vacuum tube transmitters. They've built their own solid-state high-efficiency power amplifiers. We have hybrids of modern synthesized test equipment driving vacuum tube amplifiers. We have a lot of top-loaded vertical antennas, but we also have plain vertical antennas, and we have some loop antennas. So it really is a smorgasbord of about everything you could think of that guys have adapted to this purpose. We are authorized to do Morse, ordinary CW, and we can also do in that QRSS, which is slow-speed CW copied on a computer. We also are authorized to use the PSK, FSK, and MSK31 modes of transmission, and some of the guys are in fact transmitting PSK31.
How large of an antenna are you able to use?
Well, the antenna size varies. On the short end, we have maybe a 30-foot vertical length with maybe a total of 100 feet of top-loading wire. Personally, I have a 45-foot vertical antenna. A couple of the guys have 100-foot vertical antennas with top-loading. And obviously, those are the best performing antennas. If you can get 100 feet and get good top loading on it, you can have a very efficient antenna. And those guys are able to produce the whole 20-watt effective radiated power with maybe 100 or 200 watts of RF power going into the antenna. Now, on the other end, my own antenna is probably only 2 or 3% efficient. And so if I get out a couple of watts radiated out of my system, I'm doing okay. But people are making contacts and being heard, whether it's the high power or the lower power.
Tell me about the propagation.
Well, there are two different kinds of propagation at 500 kilohertz. There's skywave and groundwave. Skywave is what you're used to, of course, on the upper HF bands and 160 meters. 600 meters or 500 kilohertz, it's a little bit different because, first of all, on almost any day, especially in the summer, you get a strong D layer in the ionosphere, and there's no sky wave from sunrise to sunset. In the nighttime, we think that we're getting both E layer and F layer refractions, and so this gives us kind of a curious mixture of short range, 50 mile to longer range, maybe 1,000 mile skip distances. On the ground wave, and that's what I think is really the important aspect, if you were to take a typical antenna that an amateur can put up, maybe a 50-foot tall vertical, and you're to look at the combination of antenna gain, propagation loss, and noise levels as a function of frequency, the 500 kilohertz frequency is just about ideal for communicating over 1 to 300 miles by a ground wave. And the ground wave, of course, is usable whether you've got a solar storm going on or regardless of what the ionosphere is doing, and is a perfect thing, I think, for regional emergency backhaul communication. You know, the amateurs really did a good job down there in coming in after Katrina and establishing communication, but we would have had a hard time doing that if the sun had been having a fit that day or that period of time, disrupting the ionosphere. The beauty of the 500 kilohertz is that you can cover this distance of 100 to 200 miles pretty reliably, and you're completely independent of the ionosphere, and you can link up the stations in a party line multi-node network fashion, as opposed to VHF stations, which you need directional antennas.
What is the record distance contact that has been confirmed at 500 kilohertz?
Well, we have a couple of records in that regard. Over land, the longest distance has been from New York to Oregon, a distance of 2,300 miles. There has been an over water, over ocean contact into Europe of 3,100 miles. Now, we have another record which is not actually a contact, but a two-way reception, because our XSH stations are not authorized to contact foreign amateurs, but a Swedish station and one of our stations were able to hear each other simultaneously, and that was a distance of 3,583 miles. Could have made a contact had it been legal. And we have reception reports going out to 4,700 miles for ordinary CW and 6,700 miles for slow-speed QRSS-3. The receiver was in Kwajalein Island.
I've done some work on 80 and even 160 meters and am well aware of the noise floor, the problem with static crashes and the like.
There's even more noise problem at 500 kilohertz, and it is not just the static crashes at 500 kilohertz that bother you, but a lot of it is man-made noise. For example, my station is in my laboratory in my office. There's one piece of equipment that has a power supply that runs at 500 kilohertz, and I cannot run that and listen at the same time. And the guys frequently report strange signals that they hear, that which are usually tracked down to computers or some kind of electronic power supply. So you're dealing with that as well as the static crashes. Now, the atmospheric noise, of course, goes way down during the daytime, and it goes way down during the winter. Winter evenings are not too bad for long-distance communication.
Of course, 500 kilohertz is just a little below the broadcast band, so anyone who's done any broadcast band actually would find 500 kilohertz to behave in a similar manner. At least at 500 kilohertz, you don't have to deal with IPOC. I'm talking with Dr. Fred Fritz Robb, W1FR, about his experimentation on 500 kilohertz. We'll be right back. This is the Rain Report. Let's have our listeners get an idea of what we're talking about. You've given me three different audio clips. Let's talk about each one and play them.
The first one that I designated number 7, this clip was made on November 3rd, 2006. This was shortly after we had gotten our license and the stations had been just scrambling to try to get on the air. That date happened to be the 100th anniversary of the Berlin Treaty that designated the 500 kilohertz band as the maritime calling and distress channel. So on that day, we marked that event by different stations transmitting commemorative messages. So in that clip, you'll hear our station 11, who is WS4S in Tennessee, as the lower pitch tone, sending celebrating 100 years of 500 kilohertz operation. And you'll hear at the higher pitch, our station 6, who is W5THT in Mississippi, sending WD2XSH stations are happy to be part of the revival of the historic 600-meter band. These were recorded by KN8AZN in Conneaut, Ohio.
Let's listen to that.
The one that I designated 27 was recorded by EI0CF in Northern Ireland, and he records a second 500 kilohertz experimental license, WE2XGR stations 2 and 6, who are in Connecticut and New York, and he was able to copy transmissions from both of those stations in Northern Ireland. Now, Finbar, EI0CF, is one of the 20 or 25 stations in the UK who are operating on 500 kilohertz under their notice of variation, which is their equivalent of an experimental license. Now, I would say not every day is it that you get copied across the pond, so to speak. A typical range is more like 500 to 1,000 miles.
Especially on 500 kilohertz.
Right.
All right, let's listen to that.
After we got our license, a couple of German stations moved experimental transmissions into the very bottom edge of our band. A Swedish station got on the air. The UK made this notice of variation available. There has been a Romanian on 500 kilohertz. And the Belgians now have actually a ham band as opposed to an experimental license where anyone in Belgium with a full license can operate. Now, the bands for the European stations vary. They run from 501 to 507, depending on what country it is.
But no one can operate in that segment of the spectrum without the experimental license.
Here, definitely not. You have to have an experimental license, and that is a process that takes a while.
Let's have our listeners listen to one more.
Well, the last one is one that I recorded in August of this year, and this is the WE2XGR6 station in New York near Rochester, who is being received in the middle of the day at almost at high noon solar time when the D layer is very strong. So this is ground wave coming across the Adirondacks, MyQTH in Colchester, Vermont. So we've got a 200-mile ground wave path here in the middle of the day in August, and we're getting very good copy of this 500 kilohertz station. Importance of this isn't that 200 miles is a great DX, but that we're verifying that we indeed can do 24-hour reliable emergency communications over a region. When we went in with the license, we were afraid, of course, if we asked for too much, we'd get nothing. So we went in first with 20 watts ERP, and we were breaking new ground and getting an experimental license for this frequency range. So then the XGR people went in, and they asked for a bit more power. XGR6 is running more like 200 watts of ERP. Their license permits them a bit higher power than we have.
Let's listen to that. Friends, we've heard three examples of communications on 500 kilohertz. How much longer will this experimentation be taking place among you 23 stateside stations and those who are abroad?
Well, we will probably be going on as experimental stations for another 2 or 3 years. And, of course, we're hoping that the end result is that we will get an amateur band at this frequency. As a practical matter, the most frequency spectrum we'll be able to get is about 15 kilohertz. So we're not going to see voice use down there except maybe as a special event or something. So it's going to be CW, QRSS, and narrowband digital modes that inhabit this frequency range.
Those who are listening, where can they read more about what you're doing?
We have a website, which is www. 500kc.com, and it gives information on our stations, statistics on our operations, and information on foreign stations as well. We've kind of tried to make that a resource for the experimenters on this worldwide.
That web address again is?
500kc500kilocharlie.com.
And if someone would like to communicate with you directly, what's your email?
Foxtrot:Romeo Alpha Alpha Bravo@IEEE.org. F.RAAB@IEEE.org.
Dr. Fred Robb, W1FR, one of 23 stateside ham operators that holds an experimental license from the FCC to operate between 505 and 510 kilohertz. His consulting firm, Green Mountain Radio Research Company, researches and designs high-efficiency RF power amplifiers for the government and commercial use. He was interviewed by Rain's Hab Holly, KC9RP. As a postscript to this Rain report that was posted in November 2008, CQ Magazine reports that the ARRL announced on August 27, 2009, that the FCC has expanded the size and scope of the experiment, permitting the number of authorized stations to increase from 23 to 42, and broadening the permitted frequencies from the original 505 to 510 kHz to 495 to 510 kHz. In addition, portable operation is being allowed for the first time. Coordinators say that they will be avoiding operation on 500 kHz itself, leaving that frequency, which was for decades the International Maritime Distress Frequency, open for use by heritage stations operating from museum ships and former shore stations. The Rain Report is copyright 1990-2008. Rain. All rights reserved. Now for Rain's founder-producer, Hap Holly, I'm Byron Lee, KC9EEK, wishing you a very 73 from all of us at Rain, the Radio Amateur Information Network. www.therainreport.com